now says that too many families are either struggling to make ends meet or are just one emergency away from a financial disaster. Then there's a headline, a subhead, millions of Americans don't have savings to fall back on, underscoring the point. Then they quote another place, a separate survey from Home Repair Service. Oh, this is great. HomeServe USA found that almost 1 in 5 Americans, 19%, report having no money set aside for dealing with the cost of an unexpected emergency expense. That report said 31% of Americans don't have at least $500 set aside to cover an unexpected expense. Now, why is the Home Repair Service interested in that? Because if you own a home or you have to get something fixed in a home that you, a house or an apartment or something, that for some reason the landlord won't fix, try and do it. Everything costs like $1,000 now. Everything is ridiculously high cost, you know? And you know, I know there's a certain number of do-it-yourselfers out there say, well, I do all that stuff myself. Well, good on you. I'm glad you have the time, the money for the parts, the expertise and know-how to fix everything. That's just great. Wonderful. I don't. Most people don't. There's certain things I can fix, certain things I can't fix. And so I got to go look for someone to repair something. And boy, when you go looking, the shock is amazing. I'll give you another example. This isn't even home repair, but it's very close. Oil changes. My memory of oil changes was in the crappy junker car that I was driving for a while. It's now sitting idle because I can't afford the repairs on it in my driveway. So we have a newish car, a newer car, big payments, all that kind of stuff, you know, whoopee, new car, bought last year, that costs a lot in terms of payments every month. Yes, that's what you do. You go in debt for that too. And then it turns out oil changes on this car and on a lot of new cars. And I've been reading about this lately. So it turns out it's on just about oil changes in general are going up for a variety of reasons. All bad, all stupid reasons. Instead of paying like 18, 20 something bucks for oil change, which you can find if you use standard oil and blah, 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 do it yourself, put it in yourself and all that. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so there's a little, some people that'll do that, right? I love these like individual survival strategies that ignore the big picture. But all right, so there's some of you out there doing all that, getting away with still relatively cheap oil change. But let me tell you something. I had Valvoline quote me, and we didn't do this, $94 to change the oil in my car. $94 to $99. I'm saying, so excuse me. you're saying you're gonna charge me $94 to change the oil in my car? They're like, yeah. I'm like, bye. You know. Okay. So it turns out now there's this whole thing of cars that need to run on synthetic oil. I didn't know. And synthetic oil, for stupid reasons, capitalist reasons, is very expensive. So you're going around like putting synthetic oil in there. That jumps the price up, you know, $30, $40, $50, you know. Now, we ended up, struggling, going around, gotten a little discount somewhere, ended up paying, what was it, like 50-something, which is like a shock, too, still a big shock. Try that with house repairs. See how much it costs to get a house painted now. See how much it costs to get plumbing done or whatever, electrical work. I mean, it's just insanely expensive. Let's see. Americans aged over 65 and over are most likely to have some money set aside. Not coincidentally, those are people that worked in a time where unions were stronger. But nearly half of Americans, 49%, cited medical emergencies as a potential unexpected expense for them in the next 12 months. And that could obviously cause that, everything from bankruptcy to just, more debt. They quoted someone from behavioral and economic analysis and decision making. Savings rate in the U.S., this is back to the savings thing, fell to 6.5% in March, which is low, obviously. Then back to this the University of Chicago NORC study found that most workers would manage a missed paycheck by cutting spending on non-essential items, 73%, but other methods consumers would imply to handle a gap in income would have serious long-term ramifications, meaning they would stop putting money away from savings, no kidding, that's already happening, and go deeper into debt. 47% would turn to credit cards or try to borrow from friends and family. And nearly a fifth of consumers nearly a fifth of consumers would rely on a payday, auto, or other short-term loan. These loans, which can carry interest rates up to upwards of 600%, can easily sink borrowers into an inescapable debt cycle and wreak havoc on their credit score. No kidding. And then there's the tyranny of credit scores out there as well. So bottom line is people are getting messed over really, really badly. Under capitalism here in the richest country in the world, the inequality and quality of life statistics are very low quality of life here compared to other capitalist countries where the labor movement and the socialist movement, by the way, is stronger and has been stronger. And very high inequality here in the U.S. So anyway, we are at the noon hour, 12:05 actually. So we have to say we are WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. Otherwise known as 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Commercial Free Community Based Radio. And that is, we're a little slice of that community base. We also call ourselves Tufts Educational Radio sometimes. And you go to 91.5 FM on your dial if you're somewhat nearby, or you can go to WMFO.org and catch a live stream there, or go to schedules and click on a show for the archived shows. Last two shows only are archived, in other words, last 2 weeks, unfortunately, but you'll get some of this. You get at least one show from us. Because we're on, you're listening to Social Alternative Radio every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Now, public service announcement, because we do those here. And this is one called Pedestrian Safety Public Service Announcement. On February 8th, and this is, they don't give a date here, but I believe it was this year or 2018, Allison Donovan was killed as she walked through the crosswalk in front of the West Somerville Neighborhood School on Powder House Boulevard, just two blocks away from Tufts University, where this radio station is. After fatally hitting Allison and injuring her companion, the driver sped away, stopping later at a restaurant for drinks and dinner and Home Depot to buy materials to hide the damage to his truck's body. That's what I meant earlier about capitalism creating sociopathic people, people that hate society, hate other people, murderously so. Yeah, that capitalism creates some real prize-winning individuals and then doubles down on it by saying, hey, be individualistic. We're all individuals. We got nothing to do with each other, blah, blah, blah. And we're just here to, like, exploit each other. Anyway, walking is one of the... Back to the PSA. That was a little editorial interlude there. Walking is one of the safest forms of transportation, but pedestrians need to pay attention to their surroundings, especially when crossing streets. Even if you have the walk light or other clear right of way, bad drivers are everywhere. Don't expect them to stop what they do or to stop for you. It's critical to comprehend some people really don't care that much about your life and would drive away if they hit you. A potentially life-saving message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio. I remember seeing the news reports on that. And if you go drive by that where Allison Donovan was killed, they have a lot of speed bumps, crosswalks, cones and stuff. And it really, they're really trying hard at that particular spot. It's right across from a school as well to make things safer. But problem is that, if you watch the news or listen to the news a lot, you see that there's just some insane stuff going on with driving, especially in Massachusetts. And unfortunately, you're not safe, even in your own home sometimes when you have trucks and cars crashing into your house. It's just crazy. It's related to that earlier point about the need for more mass transit. Let's see. So I'm looking at these public service announcements, and they're getting kind of thin here. I think because everyone is like doing the online thing, and I'm still using the paper one. But that's the way I am. This is interesting. I'm watching this thing on Netflix, French crime drama type thing, called Zone Blanche in French, and called Black Spot or something. And the way they translated it. The exact opposite, by the way, practically, of one of the real title. Anyway, so why not cover your computer camera? This factors into the plot of the show I'm watching. So I'm going to talk about this one for a second. Public service announcement. Why not cover your computer camera? If you have a computer with a webcam and you don't use it, why not cover the camera up with a piece of opaque tape? Opaque means like black, you can't see through it, tape. In addition to government programs, there's plenty of other malware. Malware is computer programs that hurt you, your computer. They hurt your computer, and that in turn hurts you. Or they set up things on your computer, in your computer drive, that will be activated when you turn on your computer and use certain things. Malware and viruses that can hijack the computer's camera to spy on you. So if you don't use the camera, consider covering it up. A message in the public interest from WFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. There's a couple of public service announcements for your enjoyment, because we always are looking out for you here at WMFO. And speaking of public transit, speaking of not having enough money, living paycheck to paycheck, I read something that really excited me. I heard it on the radio first. Listened to a lot of radio, unfortunately. No, it's not. That's okay. We like people to listen to radio. Radio is a good thing. But I just wish the radio was better, a lot better. Don't get me started. Anyway, I did find this in writing after I heard it on the radio, on the news. I think I was listening to like some big, AM news station or something. From Worcester, Massachusetts, second largest city in New England. No fare. Research Bureau calls for free WRTA bus service. WRTA stands for Worcester Regional Transit Authority bus service. So for probably bad reasons, they've cut up the state's transportation into different zones. Worcester's is the second largest. WRTA is the state's second largest regional transit authority, running 23 fixed routes to 13 communities, offering paratransit service to a total of 37 communities in its service area. I don't know what paratransit means either. Its fleet of 452 buses drives 3 million miles. Drove 3 million miles, making approximately 3.3 million passenger trips in 2018. Excuse me, in 2018. Now, this group, Research Bureau, crunched the numbers, et cetera, and it's concluded that the Worcester Regional Transit Authority is a, quote, perfect candidate, end quote, to become a free bus system, saying the $2 million to $3 million cost to making the service free would increase ridership and can be made up through cost savings, increased government aid, and partnerships. Worcester-specific conditions, rider demographics, farebox recovery ratios, service zone characteristics, and lean operations point to a perfect candidate for a fare-free system, the Research Bureau writes in the recommendations section of its report, quote, the implications of a fare-free WRTA, end quote. Now, let's think about that for a second. Yes, and triple yes, that should happen. But the question is, and it's not the only place this is being raised, and I think it's actually been done in a couple places, cities in the U.S. I have to double check on that. Wait till you hear what I have to report on here, what the reaction was among the Democratic Party-controlled Worcester City Council. And before we get to that, we're going to talk more about this bus system, which, by the way, why just bus? We should have light rail in Worcester, obviously. More train service to and from Worcester, and not just rely on buses. By the way, I would argue for a subway system in a way, but people just are. You have to go. Sometimes go in steps. People would be like, subway for Worcester? What are you talking about? Well, I mean, it's actually a great candidate for a subway system because of it's a very spread out city, but also has this still downtown that exists, although kind of suffering a bit. And now they're going to probably bring in this new baseball stadium, wasting public money on that. But if that goes through, which it looks like it is, then that brings up the argument for better transit, even from their point of view, even from the capitalist point of view. But for the people, we just need not just buses, we need light rail. And eventually we're going to need a subway there. But anyway, if it survives, we're going to take a quick break for some music here. Again, this is music that this person I definitely didn't pay for. I mean, didn't I pay for it? What am I talking about pay for it? That makes no sense at all. I don't know why that's in my head. Probably from that last article. I didn't listen to ahead of time. So this song might not be the song I'm hoping for here. But we're going to listen to that and then come back with more about why there should be free transit in Worcester. And if you're asking yourself, why not Boston? Yes, the answer is yes. Boston should have free transit too, obviously. Everywhere should have free transit. And it doesn't cost as much as they say it does to do that. So give this a listen. We'll be right back.
I don't want your photograph. I don't want your toy giraffe. I never need it on your behalf. I never needed your eyes to laugh. Wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If I had wings, I still couldn't fly. I don't want your forsake. I don't want your handshake. I never needed your keepsake. I never needed your heartbreak. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If I had wings, I still couldn't fly. I still couldn't fly. I don't want your profane. I don't want your bloodstain. I never needed your in vain. I never needed your black rain. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If I had wings, I still couldn't fly. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If I had wings, I still couldn't fly. 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 Love was given watches. I'd always have.
Deeper into me than they'll ever cut into you.
That was New Model Army with The Price from their album New Model Army Original 20, which we give a lot of airplay to here, relatively speaking, on our show, Socialist Alternative Radio, which if you just tuned in, you are listening to talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective, otherwise known as Socialist Alternative Radio. And we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Tufts Educational Radio. Before that, you heard Beggars Will Ride from Jack Balanchine Morris from an album called West Virginia Refugee. And I don't know about that song. I have to listen to it again. It seemed like he was like just stringing together some cliches there. But I like the guitar playing and stuff. We're getting our music set up for our departure in about half an hour. We have sort of a theme song here, which we'll hopefully get to play. And I'm wondering if I should put up one other song. Maybe not. Got a lot to talk about. So back to free transit here, there, and everywhere, especially in Worcester, Mass., where a research bureau concluded that the Worcester Regional Transit Authority, basically buses, should have a free bus system. It's only cost $2 to $3 million. The state's budget, by the way, they don't mention this, but the state's budget is in the billions. I mean, and the funding already comes from more than one different sources, unfortunately, also from the people. Just need to. Although a small percentage of lower taxes going to this would be justifiable. But really, we have to go back to square one with taxes on working people. They're just too high. They're ridiculous. So we need to have taxes on the rich, the super rich, the big corporations, and severely lower taxes, even eliminate, I think in many cases, taxes on working people. I don't want any more paychecks with all that tax stuff on it, all that money coming out, making a joke in terms of what I take home. But it's not just taxes. It's also paying for health care. No reason for that. Paying for dental. No reason for that. No reason to pay for retirement stuff. It's crazy. This is human needs, human rights. So they start talking about the recent ridership on the Worcester buses, you know. And it says, according to the report, the ridership has dropped 23% between 2016 and 2018. Now, why do you think that is? Well, because they raised the price and decreased services. Duh. And at the time, people in Socialist Alternative in Worcester were protesting against that and said, this is what will happen. And I think they go into that a little more in here. Maybe not. Maybe it was somewhere else I read that. But it was just absurd, you know. It was a different article. They raised the cost by a quarter, I think it was. They lower the, which was already not very good, the range of the buses. And then they say, oh, see, ridership went down, you know. Now, so this report goes out, and right away there's a response, right, from the politicians in Worcester, led by this guy, Councillor Gary Rosen, R-O-S-E-N. And Councillor Gary Rosen in Worcester, Democrat, pretty sure, is pushing for public hearings on whether or not the WRTA is, in his words, quote, possibly obsolete, and whether the city should continue to fund it at all. So you got to love liberals, right? You get this thing saying, hey, free transit. Worcester Regional Research Bureau says free transit. And what's the response from Democrats? Not all of them, most of them. Well, I'm not sure about most of them, but a lot of them. We'll see about most of them soon. On the Worcester City Council, dominated by Democrats, let's see if we can get rid of the whole thing, privatize it. So this idiot, Gary Rosen, who I'm sure drives a nice car, he says, well, you know, people don't really need it. And we should just not pay for it. Who's we? He's not paying for it. He's not riding the bus. And he calls it a relic of history. Should be closed and replaced with something along the lines of a rideshare service. Now, let's think about that for a second. What's a rideshare service? Well, that's Lyft or Uber, right? So these are Lyft or Uber, these capitalist corporations that are fairly recently come into being, that just decided to ignore regulations about transporting people that states and cities had and see if they could get away with it. Because they're a big corporation, they got away with it. They got away with it. And all the cab drivers and all the cab company people are yelling, foul, wait a minute, you didn't follow regulations that we had to follow in order to be on the road. And which is true, actually. And the Lyft and Uber just said, you know, and that is the sound of, you know what, giving them the finger, basically saying, well, we don't care, we're big corporations, and there's so little regulation of us to begin with, in general, corporations, and we'll just see what we can get away with. And they got away with it 100%. So now Lyft and Uber are standard things, right? For especially for upper middle class people. But for the rest of us, can't afford the Lyft, can't afford the Uber, might not even have the phone, believe it or not, that you can do that stuff on. Are you serious? What's wrong with him? Anyway, so what is this go to a rideshare service that this Democrat Rosen are going for here? Counselors Rosen, Candy Murrow Carlson, Kate Toomey, Sean Rose, Matt Wiley, and Mo Bergman voted to not remove the possibly obsolete language. So that means they're all for this kind of going after and trying to get rid of the bus system. Well, what happens when you go down to this, rideshare service? First of all, you break the union. You destroy the ATU union that represents the bus drivers. You destroy the service itself, obviously, which a lot of people depend on. That goes without saying almost, but I just remember to say it. Obviously, a lot of people don't own cars or can't afford upkeeping cars and the parking and everything, and so they got to ride the bus. I was that way for most of my time in Boston, riding the bus, riding the subway. Then they've got the union bus thing I mentioned. But here's the thing that might be counterintuitive, the thing you might not realize. If you bring in Uber and Lyft, you're increasing tremendously traffic congestion and traffic in general. There have been studies on that. It does the opposite of what they say. Uber and Lyft go around saying, hey, we're providing these rideshare services so less people are driving. It's not true. It's not true. There's a certain number of people that can't drive or aren't driving, and they're using that, or people are using it short term and still driving on top of that their own cars. The studies have shown that Uber and Lyft increase traffic congestion. Not that that's not the main thing I'm angry about. I'm mostly angry about just even someone thinking about getting rid of the bus service, basically saying screw you, poor people, and anyone else that rides the bus. You know, it's not just poor people, but a lot of poor people, obviously. Now, when I say poor people, I mean working people that are, you know, have to count their pennies and ride the bus. And that has been me. And that is a lot of other people. And remember that statistic, right? 3 million, 5 million. In 1998, they were doing 5 million rides a year. Now it's 3.3 million. By the way, that 23% dip between 2016 and 2018 in ridership was because fares went up by 25 cents and they cut routes. So there you go. So it's kind of like what they do anywhere when they're trying to privatize something. They make it so bad that people that don't know better will say, hey, you might as well privatize it. Well, it's always worse when you privatize it. Imagine having like first you're going to have two big duopoly of Uber and Lyft, and then one of them is going to chase out the other one, and you're going to have one ride-sharing service, which is filled with problems, by the way. I mean, we could do a whole show on the recent strike of Uber drivers. I think it was Uber, was it Lyft, one or the other, or both, because the people are using their own cars and own gas and everything and not getting paid enough to offset their costs. The people that fall for this, that do this as a second job or whatever, or as their main job even. So Rosen's like, yeah, something like the Uber system. Oh my God. Oh my God. And you know, people vote for these people. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling how you can talk about the two-party system and defend a vote for Democrats anywhere, given that what the damage they do, you know? I mean, it's obviously with someone like Trump in power, it's easy to go around and say vote Democrat, you know? But because he's such an idiot, you know. And you, and obviously Republicans are no alternative to voting Democrat, and there's no big party out there. But you can't just keep putting off forever helping to build that party. Every time you vote Democrat, you're enabling them. Every time you vote Republican, you're enabling them. You're empowering them to say they have a mandate to do X, Y, and Z. That's why a lot of people don't vote. I get that. But that's not the best thing. The best thing is to vote, but vote for something else. Vote for any progressive left-wing candidate. If you're out in Seattle, vote for Shama Sawant, right? Socialist on city council. There's anytime you find a progressive or left candidate, independent, vote for them, you know? Help build a party for working people in this country. Anyway, hopefully the people in Worcester are going to fight this, even people that don't ride the bus. And I think Socialist Alternative is going to fight this in Worcester. And hopefully the union will fight this, the ATU, and the riders themselves, like I said. And it's just really, really absurd that a very positive, excellent piece of news comes out from this research bureau. Hey, let's have free transit in Worcester. And the first thing the politicians, the liberal politicians, can think of is to get rid of the whole system and make profits for corporations like Uber and Lyft and whatever else emerges out of that mess if they get rid of this bus system, the public transit in Worcester. Speaking of public transit, out in Seattle, where Shama Sawant is running for re-election, she's a member of Social Alternative, that's spelled S-A-W-A-N-T, last name. The council member money can't buy, as they're saying out there. Free transit is becoming one of the ideas and program points that the campaign, Shama Sawant, the re-election campaign, started on. She's been in power for two terms, and she's trying to get re-elected a third term with the help of Socialist Alternative and many others. And free transit in Seattle, where there's more than enough money, just open up some taxes on Amazon, and you got enough money to fund the transit system there. And they've been expanding light rail and bus. I don't know if they're expanding bus service, but they're expanding light rail in Seattle. And it could be free very easily, but Microsoft, Amazon don't want to pay the money that it costs to actually get that workforce in to exploit every day and to get people moving around to buy stuff that they want them to buy, and to ease transportation on stuff they want people to buy and have delivered to them. Anyway, news just broke this past week, that Tim Burgess, a former longtime Democratic Party Seattle City Council member, has joined with business leaders and Republicans to form a new corporate PAC. PAC is Political Action Committee. PAC is a shorthand for a conglomeration of money, bringing together a bunch of money from rich people, for the most part, to influence and dominate an election. And the way the laws are written is that you can have a PAC that technically has no ties to a campaign, and therefore can spend as much money as it wants to try to get that person or people or party elected. And that's perfectly legal now. So they call that dark money because there's not a lot of light being shed on it, because it's now legal to just raise a ton of money from the rich and powerful and the big corporations to influence and dominate an election, basically, and not have to report much on it, and also not have to, and just say that you're not, the level of proof is very low. Say that you're not hooked up technically or officially with the campaign that you're campaigning for, with the campaign that you're putting money out for to get elected. So combined with other dark money, predominantly from the Chamber of Commerce and Amazon's Case PAC, C-A-S-E PAC, Shama now faces a war chest of over $1 million, all with the number one priority of electing, quote, anybody but Shama. So for anyone around the country that cares about the future of independent politics, especially socialist independent politics, or progressive, very progressive independent politics, very progressive in a socialist way, obviously, don't let big business, Republicans, Democrats, and wealthy conservatives buy this election. Donate today to re-elect Shama Sawant, the council member, and that's a whole thing about donation that you can find more about at shamasawant.org, or go to Vote Sawant on Facebook. I just wanted to point that out, that, it says a lot about democracy. If you think about it for a minute, everyone says, oh yeah, money buys you know, money rules in the electoral system, and that's absolutely true. But every once in a while, you get someone that defends that stuff, or they're just truly ignorant, and they and you have to explain it to them. So here you go, PAC money, Public Action Political Action Committee money, from big businesses. Chamber of Commerce, by the way, is a business federation, a business grouping, and they're pooling their money as well. Because why? Well, because the first thing that Sharma did and the Social Alternative helped with when Sharma was elected in 2015, 14, I got to go back, I might be off a year here or there, was to get a $15 minimum wage law passed in Seattle, the first in the country. $15 minimum wage law, first in the country in Seattle. And Sharma Sawant and Social Alternative were a big part. I'd say the election campaign was then turned into 15 now. And the election, during the election, Sharma Sawant's first election, 15 was the main demand. That became the main program point of the election. So now you have an election where it's very clear to a lot of people, anyone paying attention so far, that it's being trying to Amazon and big three corporate PACs are trying to Amazon, Chamber of Commerce, et cetera, trying to buy the election. They spent $350,000 in 2017 to buy their mayoral pick, Jenny Durkin, in Seattle. And what are some of the things that Sharma has stood for and is standing for? Tax Amazon. We've told that story before on the air, but successfully Sharma moved and got voted on unanimously in Seattle City Council a tax Amazon provision. And then the minute that happened, Amazon, Jeff Bezos and company said, or basically Jeff Bezos said, hey, you can't do that. We're such big, tough bullies that, you know, we're going to take away jobs from you if you don't take the tax back and blah, blah, blah. And all the Democrats except one caved. And of course, Sharma didn't cave. Sharma voted to keep the tax, and the tax, though, however, was voted down within I think it was 6 weeks or something of the tax being up there. So this is from the ShamaSawant.org. Tax Amazon, affordable housing for all. We need rent control. The for-profit housing market has failed working people. Tax Amazon, a big business, for a massive expansion of social housing. Build tens of thousands of high-quality, ecologically sustainable, permanently affordable, city-owned homes. Fund homeless services and affordable housing with developer impact fees and a vacancy tax on corporate landlords. Fight evictions and redlining with economic evictions assistance, inclusionary zoning, and a tenant's bill of rights. Then there's, I had another, I had some more on this, and it seems to have disappeared, but I'll have to do it from memories. Basically, there's also fund a new Green Deal for working people. That includes the free transit demand, as well as demands about gutting off the use of fossil fuels and so on. And then there's demands around hold on 1 second here. Let me just go back. Let's see. Fight Me Too and fight back on issues of stopping sexual harassment and domestic violence, unite against racism and bigotry, and demands around rent control, including there's a statewide ban on cities having rent control. So at the same time that there's this campaign by Sharma Sawant and also being helped by Social Alternative to get Sharma reelected, there's a campaign that we're also doing to get this ban on rent control, local rent control in cities and stuff, taken down, reversed. It wasn't always that way. By the way, they did the same thing in Massachusetts. It's the only way they could get rid of rent control in the cities that still had it here, was through that extremely undemocratic maneuver of saying, okay, the entire state now will vote on whether one city over here has rent control. Also, we're running out of time. We want to talk more about the abortion bills getting passed in like Missouri and Mississippi, Alabama. Basically, there's an article from socialistalternative.org, Keeley Mullen, May 24th, 2019, going over some of the recent things that have happened. For example, in late May, the Republican-controlled Alabama legislature passed and the governor signed a near-complete ban on abortion. There's one in, I'm skipping around here. There's this is not from the article. There's one in Louisiana where Democrats, including the Democratic governor, are going to vote for that. And Keeley, actually, the author, gets into this a little bit and says that the Democratic Party leadership has played an abysmal role in protecting abortion rights. Nancy Pelosi has said that Democrats do not have to, quote, toe the party line, end quote, on abortion. Some Democrats have clearly taken this free pass to heart. Louisiana Democratic Party Governor John Beall Edwards is prepared to sign a fetal heartbeat bill into the law any day now. I think that's already happened. I'm not sure. This shows the need for a new party. I would say Workers' Party, but that isn't here. That will unapologetically and consistently fight for women's rights. In the absence of fighting leadership coming from the traditional women's organizations or the Democratic Party's, she says, establishment, I would say the Democratic Party as a whole, new forces will need to step forward to help lead a fight back, potentially leading the creation of new women's organizations. Lessons could be drawn from the historic victories on abortion rights internationally in recent years, especially the repeal of anti-abortion laws in Ireland that were just as horrific as the Alabama law. Women have not only been at the center of the fight back against Trump, but have crucially made up a large part of recent strikes of teachers, nurses, and hotel workers. The union should join in the struggle for free, legal, and safe abortion on demand as part of a broader fight for free health care. Let's see. The unions can use their substantial social weight to fight alongside women's organizations for this demand, as well as demands for free universal child care, paid parental leave to give working families a real choice. Being forced to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term can be have devastating consequences for poor and working class women, making the role of the organized working class essential in the struggle. There's no question that a new women's movement is emerging, and these recent attacks can serve as an inspiration for this movement to organize itself and develop a new fighting leadership. While these new laws will almost certainly be struck down, decisive threats to Roe versus Wade are on the horizon, and we need to rapidly build the forces now to defeat those attacks when they come. Socialist Alternative is fighting to build the socialist feminist wing of the women's movement, which orientates to working class women and points to the interconnection of the struggle for women's liberation and ending capitalism. So, didn't get to read all that article, had to skip around due to time constraints, but this is becoming, there was a protest here in Boston even against this, and the picture with the article is the Alabama State House and some women with signs protesting this, dressed in the stuff from that show that's, it's skipping my mind, Margaret Atwood, Handmaid's Tale. Sorry about that, the delay there in my brain. This one, I'm kind of going to jump into some union stuff without an easy segue, although the end of that article kind of got into that. In Vermont, there was a 500-plus picket of union members and others against Scott Walker and Phil Scott. Scott Walker was a conservative governor of mayor and Vermont Republican governor Phil Scott. Walker was lost election. He was an extreme union buster in Wisconsin, widely hated there, although he managed to cobble enough votes together to serve two terms, but then lost. And this picket in Vermont was pretty impressive. A lot of unions involved, and also the person that sent me this, District Vice President of Vermont FL-CIO, has talked about the need for a new political party, it's really good stuff, and you should check that out. Go to the Vermont State Labor Council, AFL-CIO, check out David Van Dusen, that's V-A-N, then second last name, or however you want to say that, D-E-U-S-E-N. And really impressive list of unions, including my union, AFSCME, had a lot of people involved there up in Vermont. And I didn't get a blow-by-blow of the protest, where was it exactly and what happened and so on. I'll maybe have that next time. But it looked like that 500-plus number up in Vermont is a good turnout. There's also some articles that have come out recently, unfortunately, that the AFL-CIO leadership has de-emphasized organizing at a time just when there's an uptick, at least, and maybe more so, maybe an upsurge in labor militancy and people fighting back. And I had this article from the Real News Network from Friday, May 24th, 2019, AFL-CIO budget declares organizing unimportant. Don't have a lot of time to get into this, maybe next time, but it just seems like they are not putting the money into organizing that not nearly enough like they should be into organizing. This, of course, happened before, but this was supposedly, like, the general idea is it's changing a little bit. It was supposedly changing with new leadership of, relatively new leadership of Trumka and so on. And it's just really not not doing so. Anyway, I will try to get more info on that. There was a better article, actually, I found that went into some specifics. This is more of an interview. But you might want to check it out. FLCR budget declares organized an important Friday, May 24th, Real News Network. And this I really wanted to get to. That's why I'm hurrying up here towards the end of the show. This is from counterpunch.org. Deb's comic, posted by Ron Jacobs, May 31st, 2019. And Eugene V. Debs, a graphic biography. Debs, of course, was the leader of the Railroad Workers Union, led a mass strike, was thrown in prison. In prison, he got some visits from socialists, started reading more about socialism, and became a socialist, joined the Socialist Party, and became a leader of the Socialist Party in the United States around the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, and ran for president from prison, where he was thrown in prison for speaking out against World War I. Brilliant workers' leader and socialist, and really worth reading about. And someone has some authors have decided to make that a little more accessible. I guess there wasn't a lot of stuff out there about Debs in terms of book length stuff. This is actually a graphic novel. Eugene V. Debs, a graphic biography. New London, London, Verso Books, 2018. It's 128 pages. It's by Noah Van Skiver, Paul Buell, Steve Max, and Dave and Steve. I can't even read the names here. So they're put together in an odd way. Anyway, Paul Buell is a name I recognize. Noah Van Skiver. And then we have, like, Steve and Nance Max, I guess it's read. Or Steve and Nance Dave. Why would you write that way? Anyway. Okay, so anyway, here's some of the text from Ron Jacobs. Eugene Debs is a socialist legend, especially in the United States, where such legends are rare. So you should look him up, Eugene Debs, D-E-B-S. And even more rarely acknowledged, much less championed in today's leftist milieu. Some might even call Debs a hero. Even those who wouldn't, however, would admit his surge in popularity the last few years is at best unexpected. Then again, so is the prevalence of the word socialism in modern U.S. politics. Of course, the intended meaning of those politicians, pundits, and people using the word depends both on their knowledge of socialist theory and their personal political beliefs. For example, many of Donald Trump's right-wing advisors consider even the post office to be socialist, while Bernie Sanders and those to his left certainly do not consider the Affordable Care Act to be socialist in any meaningful way. That's the Health Care Act, despite Obamacare, so-called, despite the proclamation of the capitalist health care industry and its sycophantic supporters in government. In other words, the definition of socialism is contested and its meaning uncertain and muddled in today's United States. I would agree with that. But it wasn't always this way, of course. Indeed, in the early decades of the 20th century, socialism in the U.S. was fundamentally understood to mean the end of capitalism and the ending of the rule of the capitalist class. In turn, that rule was to be replaced by the democratic rule of the workers. Revolutionary struggle was taking place in the streets of cities around the world. Russia had actually succeeded in overthrowing the Tsar and was in the process of building a revolutionary socialist government. In the United States and much of the rest of the world, the ruling classes were truly concerned about their future. Men like Eugene Debs were considered genuine threats, men and women, I would add. In Debs' case, this threat had grown into such proportions by the time of World War I was on its full-on murderous mode. Debs was imprisoned for opposing World War I. Still, he received around 1 million votes in the presidential election shortly after the war ended. And then it goes on to talk about Debs as a president of the American Railway Workers Union. He became a socialist, informed by the writing of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, a gift from socialists in Milwaukee of the Communist Manifesto, had a big impact on Debs. So it's pretty much, you know, graphic novel, also goes into some context for Debs at the time, and goes into Debs as a person more as well. And let's see what else. That that might be the main points we need to cover here. Let's see. Well, I like the last paragraphs here. Hopefully the fact of Eugene Debs's and the concept of socialism and recent upsurge in popularity in the United States is a harbinger of a meaningful and progressive change in the nation's political future, despite the desperate times of forever war, gross economic inequality, police brutality, anti-women legislation, ongoing racism, discrimination, and the climate change that we currently face. There is a valid argument to be made that the situation was equally desperate during Debs' political life, with World War, strikes being met with state and corporate violence, lynchings, child labor, overt legal discrimination against blacks, women, and immigrants during Debs' time, he's talking about. And we can talk about it now, too, I guess, to a certain extent. The fundamental cause of the current crisis is just as it was when Debs was organizing, and that is capitalism. That is the main cause of what we're talking about, of all the different problems we're talking about. This fact is made clear in Eugene Debs' A Graphic Biography. And he suggests you buy it and read it and don't just read Organize. And we agree with that here on Socialist Alternative Radio. And our last few minutes here. Let's see. Everything we have left to cover is going to take some time. And don't know if we got that time. We definitely don't have that time, so I wonder what I should pick. Well, you've been following the college admissions scam. I found a good article in Counterpunch also. Counterpunch, May 31st, 2019. This is written by John O'Kane. He says, when I hear the phrase college admission scam, unquote, I reach for my copy of George W. Bush's resume. This gem started to circulate not long after his first interviews when he ran for president. Straining to recall the names of foreign leaders and stuttering through a series of painful contortions around the issues of the day. His alleged C average at Yale hardly demeans the quality of this institution, which, like many private ones, keeps slots open for legacy admissions. Legacy means relatives in the past have attended the university, most likely parents or grandparents. But his quite average resume, earned before being elected president, offers the opportunity to reflect on the myth about the supposed superior value of an elite education. The obsession with scoring an elite school is, to a great extent, about rubbing noses with future presidents and banking the blue pigment in as many institutions as possible through life, getting admittance to a rarefied culture that dispenses extraordinary privileges. Of course, all this comes with no guarantee, but if you play your cards right, your resume lines with bad business ventures like Mr. Bush's might convert alchemy into entrepreneurial gold for well-connected financial wizards, even lead to early golden parachutes, etc. So anyway, he's just going into the problems of Ivy League schools. Central to the American dream is the notion that education in its most basic form can vault you over obstacles of all kinds, especially the extra advantages that elite degrees can bring. We mostly ignore these advantages, deferring to the powerful myth of the individual. Our democratic ethos inspires the idea of equal opportunity, the idea that anyone who can give it or try and get credentials is welcome, as long as they spring for the tuition or get a grant or scholarship. The possessor of something less than an elite degree certainly has a chance, but the evidence of this mostly invisible strain of privilege considerably weakens this mythology in endowing a segment of our society with many more votes to secure their needs and desires. Their advantages breed more and more of the same. The awards and accolades pile up almost exponentially, monopolizing the field and expelling many potentially qualified contributors from consideration. So this is, continues on. In other words, the idea of this recent college admission scam being unique, not true, why is this so wanted by people, not just upper middle class and rich people, but by so many, when there are real internal problems with the whole elite school thing, elite private school university thing going on. This guy, John O'Kane, teaches his writing at Chapman University. But anyway, check that out also on Counterpunch. And we're going to have to start wrapping it up here. And as usual, we didn't get to a lot of our stuff. But hey, that's the struggle for socialism. It is wide-ranging, and you can't always time it perfectly. That's certainly a historic truism at this point. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with more of what it's really like to live under this so-called boom period in the economy. And we're also going to be following this story, and hopefully with some direct participation in protesting against the possible dismantling of the transit system in Worcester, when instead people are calling for it to be free. Let's just end with our theme song here. And if you really want to strike a blow for socialism in the United States, make it concrete. Check out the Shama Sawant campaign, KSHAMA, last name SAWNT, for re-election in Seattle, the only socialist city council I'm aware of. And I don't count DSA on purpose, if you're wondering about that, if you know what DSA is. But check that out. Check that campaign out for the ideas as well, not just, helping. We hope you will help, but just for the ideas as well. It's a very important campaign. And the things that have already been accomplished out in Seattle through having just one socialist on the city council out there. So we're going to go out with, again, like I said, our theme song here on Socialist Alternative Radio, Imagine by John Lennon of the Beatles, who was imagining an alternative to capitalism in this song. Is pretty clear. And then, what some things related to that. And we want to thank you again for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. So check out socialistalternative.org. And check out Socialist Alternative Radio's Facebook page. We are usually posting new material to it every day. And you'll find some of it, I think, gets right to the heart of the way you're living and the way we could live and have better lives, all of us. And with that, enjoy the rest of your day and keep in touch. And we'll be in touch, too, through Socialist Alternative Radio and through the socialist movement. Thanks a lot.
Sky.